The Maine Calling Book Club takes on Stephen King's Carrie. This year marks the 40th anniversary of the publication of Carrie. It was Stephen King's fourth novel, but the first to be published. The story of a telekinetic teenage girl who snaps after years of torment, raining destruction on her small town, is now embedded in our culture through not just the book, but also the movies and even a Broadway play. King was as surprised as anyone by Carrie's success. He was so disgusted with the beginning of the book, he threw the first three pages in the trash. His wife, Tabitha, fished them out. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the Maine Calling Book Club, we discuss Carrie, the book itself, and how it reads today, 40 years after making Stephen King famous. The Maine Calling Book Club brings on thrills, chills, and supernatural forces just in time for Halloween. But first, this news update. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It has been 40 years since Stephen King's first novel was published. Carrie tells the story of Carrie White, a high school girl who doesn't fit in. Her mother is a religious fanatic, and Carrie, like many high school students, is simply trying to find her way. But a prank of great cruelty unleashes in Carrie telekinetic powers that wreak havoc on not just her high school, but the whole community. King has called his first novel Raw, and today on the Maine Calling Book Club, we'll hear from our panelists, their reaction to this book. With me in the studio, Kate Flora. She's the author of 14 mystery and true crime books. She has two new books out, a true crime story called Death Dealer, How Cops and Cadaver Dogs Brought a Killer to Justice. Her latest Joe Burgess mystery is And Grant You Peace. Kate is also a former Maine District Attorney. Bill Lundgren is a writer, blogger, bookseller at Longfellow Books in Portland, and a favorite Maine Calling guest. He's also with us. And Alex Irvine. He's written more than 30 books ranging from supernatural histories to movie novelizations. His most recent novel is Buyout, a near future noir, that's hard to say, about the surveillance state and capital punishment. Welcome all of you to Maine Calling. And as always, we invite you to be part of the conversation. Have you read Carrie, either when it first came out or more recently? What did you think? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, that's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to you all. I have to confess I'd never read Carrie, and I'm possibly the only person in my generation who's never seen the movie. So this was very fresh to me, and I'm just so interested. I'm so excited that this is our book club book this month, and so interested in what all of you thought about it. And Bill Lundgren, I'm going to start with you. You hadn't read it either.
I had not. No, my students were actually very excited when I told them I hadn't read it, because they thought I was going to come on the show without having read it, which is the way they usually come into class. So they hadn't done their work. But I said, no, I will read it. And it was riveting, I have to say.
It's so interesting how it's constructed, too, isn't it? It's not a straight narrative. There's a lot going on.
There is. And King has, it's his first published novel. He has sort of, he said it was very raw. What was his one quote? He said, "I thought that I had written the world's all-time loser," after he finished the book. And it is a really early effort. It's a raw is a good way to describe it. As a friend of mine put it, if he would rewrite this book now, it would be much better written, but it probably wouldn't be as engrossing.
Kate, what about you? What did you think? Had you read it before, or was this your first read?
This was my second read, but 40 years is a big gap. So I think that when I read it before, my reaction was basically to be sort of fascinated by the Carrie character. And now, that I've written many, many novels myself and teach writing, I was very interested in the style, the epistolary style that he had chosen, and why he had, sort of opened with this incredibly dramatic sort of first, it's a third person, it's an observed scene, but it's a very present, very vivid, very active scene. And then he pulls back and does all of those different pieces that he weaves throughout the story.
And Alex, what about you?
Well, it was my second read, too. And the first time I read the book, I think, was probably sometime in the mid-80s. I was in high school. And coming back to it, I remembered a lot of that previous experience, because when you read Carrie in high school, of course you identify with her because everybody feels like they're a misfit in high school. And then when I came back and read it this time, again, with a bunch of books in between, you know, my last experience reading it, I was really struck by the technical stuff, too, because it's, you know, King is so known for the for his addictive storytelling qualities and the sort of narrative momentum he builds. And the tricky thing about doing that in this book is he gives the whole thing away right at the beginning. You pretty much know a lot of what has happened within the first 15 pages.
And right. You know it's not going to end well.
Yeah. You spend the whole book just finding out what's already going to have happened. And most people would not be able to create a book that has any kind of suspense or momentum after when you pop your main narrative balloon right away. But this book pulls it off, and it's interesting how it does it, I think. And
that's pretty brave for a young author to do that.
Yeah, there's a lot of chances taken in this book for a guy who's never published a novel before. I mean, he's a young male novelist choosing. One of the primary topics of the book is menstruation, right? And female sexuality and women becoming women, and so I think that there's a lot of that stuff that he might handle differently now with a little bit more experience. But I admire the bravery of the effort trying to empathetically understand that.
Kate, as a female author, how do you think he did?
Well, I think he did a great job. I mean, he raised a whole bunch. I mean, I think that one of the things that it reminded me of is when Wally Lamb came out with his book, She's Come Undone. And the whole world sort of went wild, the critical world saying, oh, he's written this brilliant book about a 13-year-old girl and, you know, her troubles and her struggles, and he inhabited her so very well and so forth. But I think that my reaction was, yes, he did that really well, but also that's really what novelists are supposed to be able to do. What's amazing, I think, is what Alex said, that you know, this is his first effort. He actually, I believe it was not his first book. It was his third book. But, you know, to pull
his first published book.
His first published book, but I think the third book that he'd written. And so, you know, for a very young and as Bill says, raw narrative, but to be able to nail in that opening scene, you know, he's sort of basically raised every single issue that a high school girl is ever going to face, except perhaps telekinesis.
Well, you know, I'm trying to find right here a note about here it is. This is from Wikipedia about when Stephen King wrote the book. It says, to cut down on expenses, King had the phone company remove the telephone from his house. As a result, when King received word that the book was chosen for publication, his phone was out of service. Doubleday editor William Thompson sent a telegram to King's house, which read, quote, Carrie, officially a Doubleday book, $2,500 advance against royalties. Congrats, kid. The future lies ahead, Bill. Bill Lundgren, that's maybe the understatement of the century.
Absolutely.
In the literary world.
So $2,500 advance, and then the paperback rights are sold for $400,000, and King was enabled to quit his teaching job. But to follow up on the thing about the female perspective, King has said that one of the impetuses for the book, he got a letter from a woman who said that he was macho, that his writing was macho, and he was incapable of writing about a woman. And so he wrote that first locker room scene, and he threw it away. And Tabitha took it, retrieved it out of the wastebasket, and convinced him, no, you got to finish this book.
Nothing like a good challenge to get the creative juices going, huh?
Yeah, we'll
you
see
can't
about that,
do
right?
that. Yeah. That's right. And I want to talk a little bit about Stephen King himself. One of the things that astonished me, I always knew he's prolific, but just opening, you know, to the in the front of the book, and books by Stephen King, they had to use, you know, 6-point type to fit them all into one page. Astonishing imagination. And to say he's prolific is really, it just doesn't even scratch the surface.
You know, and one of the criticisms of him has been that he published too quickly early in his career. There's a great scene from early Saturday Night Live of the camera focus on this guy who looks just like Stephen King, and it says Stephen King at work, and he's furiously typing away, and he stops and he goes, oh no, writer's block. Oh good, it passed.
That's great. You know, one thing that's really interesting is that 40 years have passed, and in our culture, a lot has happened. And I was thinking a lot about, you know, here on Maine Calling and when I hosted Maine Watch, we did shows about bullying. This is very much in the current consciousness right now and having teenagers and preventing bullying. This book was 40 years ago. I don't even know if bullying was a phrase that was used.
Bullying was not a phrase that was used, but bullying was a thing that was done. And, you know, I think, you know, that, you know, one of the things that Alex said is that, you know, we've all survived high school. If you've been to high school, then you know that, you know, that everybody's miserable and everybody, you know, feels like the outcast. But also, you know, there was a tremendous amount of bullying going on. I often say that it is a miracle to me that women grow up to be friends as adults when you consider how hateful women often are to each other during the middle and high school experience.
And what an observer Stephen King must have been during high school to be able to write about that. Not just bullying, though, but we've had some horrible school shootings that have happened in the 40 years since. I don't think any had happened in 1974.
Well, there was one I had cause to read about this recently for a thing that I'm working on, actually. But the first school massacre that ever took place in the U.S. was in 1927 in a town in western Michigan. This guy just went nuts and blew up the local elementary school and killed something like 40 kids. That was really the only one of any kind of scale at the time that he was writing Carrie. And I was thinking about that, too. The book reads very differently when you have Columbine and Virginia Tech and Sandy Hook in your rearview mirror as you're reading it. Than I think it did when it came out, when the whole notion of a kid destroying a high school and turning on her classmates in this murderous rage was foreign in a way that it's not now. Now it's part of the cultural landscape. This is something that people actually do, and so I think that we can't actually read Carrie the way that that people read it when it first came out.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Kate.
I was just going to say that the one thing that I would note about that is that at least so far, all of our school shootings, all of our school massacres have involved male shooters. Mm-hmm. So I think it's an interesting and hopefully not something that people will take up the challenge of change to have imagined that the person who's going to carry out the bad acts is a female, is a young girl who's mm-hmm. responding to bullying as opposed to a young male.
How much is this book about Maine, or how much is this about anywhere?
Well, it's interesting. I just saw, I think it was on Facebook a couple weeks ago, they did a thing, the most iconic book published in every state. And Carrie was listed for Maine, and many people were critical of that. But it is I think it's quintessential Maine. It's quintessential high school culture for sure. The thing, to get back to the bullying, is I mean, that's the central theme of this whole piece. And what amazes me is how sympathetic he makes this character that kills 500 people and destroys the town. And yet he's firmly in her corner. And as a reader, you're firmly in her corner, too. But, you know, having taught in rural Maine in high schools, I think this is very quintessentially Maine.
What about you guys?
Well, I think the quintessential Maine novel is probably The Beans of Egypt, Maine. But, in terms of small town culture, in terms of class structure, in terms of ins and outs, in terms of, you know, the athlete being the person, you know, they're the golden boys, they're the cheerleaders are the golden girls. In terms of high school hierarchy, but also in terms of the way that people in small towns know each other and know each other's business, I think it's really interesting. And also the way, even though, and this is, I think, the bad side in some ways of our tolerance for people who are different, is that everybody left Carrie alone with her crazy mother. No one ever intervened over the years when it was clear that this child had been abused and neglected and terrorized by her own family or by her own mother. You know, that's a main thing, too. A main thing is, you know, mind your own business and let other people attend to theirs.
One thing that struck me is how, I really hesitate to say this because I'm not maybe qualified to, but how literary in some ways the book is, how the little parentheticals with what the people were thinking almost reminded me of E.E. Cummings, mm-hmm. how sometimes complex the structure was with the epistolary mixed in with the narrative, but also how there are themes throughout. I was going to say throughout literature, but I mean going back to the myths that you learn about in high school, just interesting to me how it wasn't just a great story that made you want to race through the book, but there was a lot going on.
Yeah, and that's the reason it's, you know, survived even the 40 years that it has. I mean, King has come in for some criticism for being essentially too prolific or too popular and or lowbrow, but I think that if you actually pay attention in his best books, there's a lot going on, and he has from the very beginning, you can see it in this book, essentially used genre trappings of all different genres as a way to sort of amplify and gloss the ordinary human interactions that are already happening. And I mean, so Carrie is a novel, it's about bullying, and it's about specifically the effect of bullying on vulnerable girls. And so if you want to tell a story about that, but you want to turn up the volume to 11, what do? You give the girl a superpower. And then then it's a story about a girl who destroys a whole town. But because of all of the ordinary human stuff that she wades through and that we all wade through. And he does that a lot, especially in his early books. Salem's Lot is the same way, where, you know, Salem's Lot is a town. The people are already chewing on each other and tearing each other apart. And then the vampires show up. And again, they amplify the effect of the ordinary human relationships that were already there.
So note to aspiring horror writer, take something normal and usual and typical and add a supernatural element.
It starts with the people. And if the basic relationships among the people don't work, the book's not going to work either.
My goodness, we have to take a quick break already. When we come back, your comments and questions, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. This is the Maine Calling Book Club.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Highland Green, a 55-plus active adult community on a 635-acre campus with nature preserve, highlandgreenlifestyle.com. Endicott Home in Scarborough, celebrating 10 years with an October event featuring non-toxic furniture, condofurniture.com, and Mid-Maine Restoration, specializing in steeple and tower restoration throughout Maine and New Hampshire for over 25 years, maine-steeplejacks.com.
This is Nora Flaherty, your host for All Things Considered here at MPBN, Maine Public Radio. Every day you count on your public radio station to keep you informed about important events and issues in our world and country, and also to keep on top of what's going on here in Maine. Every evening at 5:30 on Maine Things Considered, we focus on our state, but now we're also making sure that whenever you tune into All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30, you'll also hear what's going on here in Maine. After all, that's important. So join me each evening for All Things Considered here on MPBN. Thanks a lot.
5 days to go till the election, and MPBN's Your Vote 2014 online election resource is there for you. The debates, Maine Calling candidate conversations, issues comparison grid, and candidate profiles are available online at mpbn.net. Just click on Your Vote 2014. Also, tonight at 8 on MPBN Television, we'll broadcast a gubernatorial debate with all three candidates from earlier this fall from our friends at WCSH and WLBZ. And this afternoon at 1 here on MPBN Radio, we'll rebroadcast the Senate debate. In addition, this weekend on Sunday afternoon, both MPBN Radio and Television will rebroadcast all the debates. More information, including the schedule, it's all online at YourVote2014 at mpbn.net.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the Maine Calling Book Club discusses Stephen King's classic, Carrie. With me in the studio, Bill Lundgren, who's a writer, blogger, and bookseller, and teacher. Kate Flora, she's author of 14 mystery and true crime books, and she's also a former Maine district attorney. And also with us, Alex Irvine. He has written more than 30 books, the most recent of which is Buyout. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Alex, we were talking about a little during the break. I was hesitant to read this book because I thought I'd be scared to death, and I wasn't. It wasn't a scary book.
Yeah, it's not. It's basically a science fiction novel. It's a thought experiment. What would it look like if a human being manifested a telekinetic mutation, but not too many at once, and what if it was keyed to adolescence in a particular way, and so in that way, it's a classic science fiction novel, and I think, you know, a lot of King's early books are like that too. You know, The Dead Zone takes place in the future, and The Stand is this sort of post-apocalyptic book, and a lot of his short stories that he was publishing before he wrote Carrie are also they're just pure classic science fiction stories. But he's come to be known as the master of horror, which I've always found kind of interesting because he's not spoken about in the same way as a science fiction writer or as a writer of mystery novels, which a lot of his books contain those elements too because of the overlap there always is between mystery and horror.
It seems to me we're talking about genres, and I have a teenage daughter, so I'm very well of a genre that you might be able to classify as the mean teenage girl genre, often young adult books. But was there really a popular book before this that you know, since then? I mean, think Tina Fey, the YA shelves of your bookstore, Bill, I'm sure, are filled with these. Mm-hmm. But was this the first, really?
To my recollection, 40 years ago, yeah, I don't think people were writing about that the way that King does in this novel.
Right, right. So we have an email from John. He writes from Durham, around the corner from where King grew up. So Durham, possibly Chamberlain, Maine. Carrie was the first novel I ever read just for fun. It was a Christmas gift from my brother when I was 14. On a whim, I started reading that night before bedtime, thinking I wouldn't get far, and it will just be another book to set aside. King's writing style immediately sucked me in, and at about 4:30 in the morning, I was finished. I just could not stop reading it. So, authors in this studio, explain to me, what is it about King's writing that makes you do that, that makes you stay up all night?
If we knew, we'd be doing it too.
You go ahead, finish up.
Well, it's that's one of the things about writers like King is they create this incredible momentum, and when you, one of the things you do when you're a young writer and you're just starting out is you, or at least I did, you read the books you admire and you try and figure out how they work, and so I did that consciously with lots of different books, but a couple of King's, and it's really tricky. I think there's this ineffable page-turning quality that you find in certain writers, and he has it. You know it when it's there because you're turning the pages, but it's really hard to isolate how it works and reproduce it. It's I can't explain it any better than that. Maybe Kate can.
Oh no, I don't think so. Although, you know, I think we all as writers deconstruct novels all the time. You know, take it apart and say, how do they do it? And we tell our students, you know, go back and look at what you've written and you know, make these sort of graphs or outlines, you know, use colored markers. You know, where's the action? Where's the introspection? Where's the this? Where's the that? So that you can sort of see, you know, what the pattern of your writing looks like and do that with other people's novels as well. But this one's unusual because, you know, it's not a straightforward narrative where it's the pacing that is pulling you forward. It's the curiosity about, you know, he plays a game with you where you start out and you've got this very dramatic scene in the locker room and, you know, you're reading about Carrie and you're going along. And then suddenly, you know, there's a scientific paper and there's an interview and there's a piece from, you know, this sort of committee which assembled to sort of go back and look at how this was put together, you know, what happened on the night the town blew up. And, you know, in some ways, those are intriguing. But in some ways, you whip through those because you want to get right back to the action because you've got, you know, real stuff to get back to. And so it's almost like he's playing that game with you of I'm going to make you stay here and watch me do this kind of, you know, Rubik's Cube kind of thing where you keep turning it to see where it's going to come out.
Yeah, it's a really self-assured performance, I think, for a guy who hadn't written too many books at that point, because to make the documentary history stuff work in so many different formats. And that stuff is actually really fun to write because you get to imagine conversations and transcribe them. And it's a blast to do, but it's tricky sometimes to put it together and keep your book moving while you're doing it.
If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Have you read Carrie recently, seen the movie? Did it affect you in any way? You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MaineCalling, or you can post to our Facebook page. We have an email from Deb. She writes, my daughter chose Carrie for a reading assignment in her ninth grade English class and loved it. She was very critical of the most recent movie version of the book. None of us has seen the most recent movie version of the book, but two thoughts here. One, is this book appropriate for a ninth grader? I have an eighth grader and an 11th grader. I've been thinking about that. And also, you know, when you read this book, you can tell it's going to be made into a movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's really, you can just see the episodes, you can see the movie unfolding as you go. So what do you guys think? Is ninth grade okay?
I think it depends on the ninth grader.
I would say so, too.
Yeah.
And if she loved it, I think my son would love it.
Getting back to why is it so relatable, one of the things King talked about is he went to grade school and middle school with two girls. He said that Carrie is a composite of the two. And one of them in particular only had one set of clothes that she wore the whole year. And so she was she was made fun of throughout the whole year. And when I was teaching in Spanish Harlem, I had a student write an essay about not having a change of clothes to wear to school and how incredibly demoralizing it was for her. And what I love is the empathy that King shows towards Carrie and towards those characters, because he grew up and he moved all over the place and they were very poor. And clearly he relates and he feels this sympathy and this empathy.
This is from Stephen King's, I believe this is from On Writing, and the part where he says, how I wrote Carrie, he writes, there is a goat in every class, the kid who is always left without a chair in musical chairs, the one who winds up wearing the kick me hard sign, the one who stands at the end of the pecking order.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
talking about the girls that he based this character on and the character himself. And I haven't read enough Stephen King. Is it a theme to those of you who have read him a lot that he returns to?
Yeah, it's there. It's most intensely present in this book, I would say. But there's always a great deal of empathy for the underdog and the kids who are outcasts. And a lot of the time, some of the kids who are outcasts come together and form, you know, they're parts of groups that are independent of school groups. You see that like in It and other books like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to go to Janet in Brunswick. Hi, Janet. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. In the late 1980s, I was a social worker in an assisted living facility in another state. And among my many duties was to make a seating plan for the dining room. And I made that plan, and one of the women at a particular table came up to me. And I have to add that these were people who had come as young children with their families from another country and settled in various parts of New England. So some of them had known each other at least when they were very young and now again when they were very old. And this particular woman said, I will not sit with that man, and named him. He was a bully on the playground when we were in kindergarten, and he's still a bully. So that word bully that you were talking about has been used for a very long time.
Yeah.
Part of the popular culture, though, when these people were growing up, when you were growing up, was it a part of, though, the social consciousness in high school, where kids going to meetings to talk about bullying and how do we eliminate bullying and things like that?
No, not at all. And I'm not as old as my people were.
Oh, I'm sure. You were the young person working in the... Yeah, so yes. Have you read Carrie?
No, I haven't. I love to read, but I haven't read Carrie.
I know. Isn't it funny? I think a lot of people maybe have seen the movie but not read it. And I was pleasantly surprised. So, Janet, thanks so much for calling in. One thing that I learned studying up for this program is that this is one of the most banned books. Why is that, Bill? Is it because it has to do with menstruation in the beginning?
Yes,
I think that's part of it. But I think also it's this virulent anti-evangelical tone of the book. I think probably many of the places where it's banned are traditional schools where that anti-religious crusade that is very much a part of this book. I mean, Carrie's mother is crazy. She's a crazy religious nut. And she abuses Carrie.
She does, but, you know, it's interesting because, like Carrie, I think King also treats her with sympathy.
He does. He does, which is masterful.
Yeah, and there's some of those documentary sources that you see later in the book give some context about her and where she came from and her own family background. And so the book is, in that sense, about how this cycle of isolation and abuse and alienation perpetuates itself unless someone steps in and breaks it. But even then, so Tommy and Sue, right? They step in and try and help carry out, and partly to absolve themselves of their role in what's come before, but also just out of actual human kindness. And then that backfires in a really horrible and spectacular way. So the book is kind of in a way about, you know, how sometimes that kindness is too late and maybe it needs to come a little quicker.
That's right. Kate, what did you think of the idea that this telekinetic power could only be inherited by women, by girls?
Not to put you on the spot here. This is a great spot to be in. You know, I mean, but that, you know, getting back into this whole notion of how, you know, this sort of coming of age and coming of womanhood unleashes women's dangerous powers. I mean, the world has sort of feared women's dangerous powers forever. That's, you know, why some cultures are so bent on, you know, and some religions are so bent on putting women down, is that, you know, the idea of women as powerful is a really scary idea. It's an iconic scary idea. So, you know, the idea, I mean, I was more, actually slightly more intrigued by the idea of the fact that she inherits, that these powers are unleashed, really, you know, when she becomes a woman. But she had inklings of those when she was tiny, you know, when she was moving things around. But, you know, when she came into it, I mean, in some ways, what's interesting is that she is a character who has these, is suddenly endowed with these terrifying powers. And she practices with them a little. But it's kind of like, you know, as a 14-year-old getting into your mother's car and driving because you've done it once or twice and going 100 miles an hour, you know. And I think that's another way in which King, you know, sort of exonerates Carrie. Yes, she destroyed the town, but she destroyed the town because she was just learning to juggle. And, you know, so, you know.
Well, and I think Sue says this, or somebody says this when they're having an interview with someone. You have to remember, we were all kids. We were all teenagers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so even the characters themselves, I mean, through the characters, King is saying just trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's hard to figure it out when you have this extra thing to figure out. And also, the point is made very early in the book that Carrie doesn't know a lot of things that she should know. Like when, you know, her, when she has
her first menstruation,
she doesn't know what's happening. She thinks she's dying. And that bell is rung several times throughout the book. Carrie doesn't know anything except for what she's able to glean from school. And that's part of why her reaction is so violent, because she doesn't have any context to understand it. Nobody's ever helped her learn how to deal with things.
Well, please feel free to join the conversation. The phone number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Highland Green, a 55-plus active adult community on a 635-acre campus with nature preserve, highlandgreenlifestyle.com, and Memic, a workers' compensation insurance company dedicated to safer workplaces, fair treatment for all workers, and a strong Maine economy, on the web at memic.com. And Casella, handling over 1 million pounds of recyclables daily in the state of Maine. Casella, giving resources new life.
It's been nearly 4 years now since Paul LePage of Waterville was elected governor.
It is people before politics.
This fall, the people get another chance to choose among LePage, Democrat Mike Michaud, and Independent Elliot Cutler. This is Erwin Gratz, local host of MPBN's Morning Edition. We'll be covering the campaign, watching the ads, and providing analysis and commentary leading to your vote 2014. Join us weekdays for Morning Edition on MPBN Radio.
And also join us at 1 o'clock following Maine Calling for a rebroadcast of Maine's Senate debate.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the return of the Maine Calling Book Club. Our book this month, Stephen King's Carrie. With me in the studio, Alex Irvine. His most recent novel is Buyout, a near-future noir about the surveillance state and capital punishment. Kate Flora is with us. She's an author and former DA. She has two new books out, And Grant You Peace, a Joe Burgess mystery, and Death Dealer, a true crime story. some ambitious and prolific people here with me today. And also with us, Bill Lundgren. He is a writer, teacher, blogger, and bookseller at Longfellow Books in Portland. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Got Mandy and Kearsarge. How are you, Mandy?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
I just wanted to say, with Stephen King, part of what makes him such a great writer is he can take the normal and make it terrifying. I'm reading a collection of his right now called Just After Sunset, and by far the scariest one in there is one that hits home because it could be true and it could actually happen.
Yeah, it could be true. There's some element of truth in it. That's right. Yeah, thank you, Mandy. We're going to go up to Gray. Gray and Joy. Joy, go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I am a reader, but I mostly read things with happy endings. And I've never read Stephen King. And should I try Stephen King and read Carrie?
Sure. Yeah, sure. Read something a little different. And
I know.
Expand your horizons.
I wouldn't characterize the ending as happy, but it was quite a read. Bill, does Stephen King have any books with a happy ending?
You know, I'm not familiar enough with his body of work, but I would recommend a book that he wrote that is a classic. It's On Writing, a Memoir of Craft, where he talks about his education and evolution as a writer. It's a fantastic book. And also I wanted to mention that this idea that he takes the normal and he makes it horrific or really chilling. One of the quotes from the book that I loved was Sue, and she's thinking about, they're the golden couple, Sue and Tom, and she's thinking about that their status as the golden couple. And Stephen King writes, "And she knew with sudden hatefulness that there was one couple like them in every suburban high school in America." And I think that is the heart of this novel. I think it's Stephen King as outsider commenting on, you know, how the kids who are outside feel, but the kids who are the popular kids maybe feel some of those same feelings.
Sure.
Yeah, they have their own pressures.
Yes, definitely.
But I'm trying to think of a Stephen King book with a happy ending for Joy.
Her name is Joy.
What about Lean on Me?
Stand By Me.
Stand By Me.
Yeah, that one.
Well, that's a short story, right?
Yeah, it's a novella. Yeah. I was thinking Salem's Lot turns out okay.
Okay.
Sort of okay.
There you go,
anyway.
Salem's Lot.
Well, doesn't the Shawshank Redemption story ultimately have a pretty good ending as well?
Yes, you know? Shawshank Redemption.
There you go, Joy. Some recommendations. Moving. There you go. Moving up to Camden and Jack. Hi, Jack. Go ahead.
Hi there. Enjoying the show a lot. Thanks, guys. One of the things about Stephen King that it's just incomprehensible to me is how any writer can be able to get into the head of a pre-adolescent boy and his friends, and then in another book, jump and be able to understand, anticipate, describe the most psychotic, sociopathic kind of killer. And everything between those two extremes, he is able to empathize with. And I would like to ask you guys, how is it that one person can understand such a variety of people?
Or just have such an imagination, huh? Alex, go ahead.
Well, I think we're all going to have different answers to this question. But mine would be that every character begins with a little bit of yourself, and you start to say, well, how would I act in this situation? How would I act in this? If I was an 8-year-old boy, let's say, and this thing happened, you know, what would I do? Because at one point I was an 8-year-old boy, and I can remember at least some of it. And then the rest of it, you extrapolate and you invent. And then, you know, when you're writing about the horrible monster from another dimension that wants to devour everyone's souls, I never did that. But but you can tap certain feelings to get that portraiture started, and then from there it's just imagination. You just make it up as you go along and see if it works.
Kate, you are a DA. Are any of your characters based on people you've known or prosecuted?
Well, I wasn't actually a DA.
I was
an assistant attorney general.
Oh, okay.
And I was in the civil side, but I was dealing with bad guys, you know, people's bad acts, but they were the civil side of things that could become criminal or did become criminal. But I think, you know, following up on Alex's comment, when I teach writing, and I often have students who it's the first time that they've ever written anything that's not about them, it's not sort of essentially autobiographical, because that's where most writing begins, I say to them, what you need to do in order to write characters who are different is to start by saying, what is not me about this character, about this person that I'm trying to create, about this situation? And then ask yourself, what do I need to know about this thing that is different, about these differences that I don't yet understand, that I need to fully imagine and flesh out and learn about in order to craft that character who is different? And, you know, and that, and the other thing that, that Alex was talking about, which is also extremely valuable, is we all have the capacity for violence if the right buttons are pushed. We all have the capacity for a much broader emotional range, a physical range, and lifestyle range than we ever actually engage in. And you sort of tap into that. For example, if you want to know what it might be like to kill someone, imagine them threatening your child. Imagine your child at risk, and then just pull up all those feelings. You know, some of it is like method acting. You know, you just, you get into that zone and you begin to think, how is that person seeing or feeling?
Yeah. Bill, you have any thoughts on how he does it?
You know, I think if you read his memoir again on writing, Stephen King, he insists, I don't have much more talent than any other writer. I'm just an incredibly hard worker. And I think he's probably, for all the pages he's written, we talked about how prolific he is. How many pages have never seen the light of day as he's tried different things out? He just has a prodigious work ethic. And I think that comes through in the stuff that gets published and that we read and that, you know, engrosses us. Mm-hmm.
Jack, thanks for the great question. We have a quick email from somebody on Facebook who says, his name is Don, and he says, regarding King books with a happy ending, he recommends The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon and Head Down. So that recommendation is posted on our Facebook page. Going to Elaine in Bar Harbor. Hi, Elaine. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a remark. I read a lot of classic horror, and one thing I find remarkable about Stephen King is his unique ability to really frighten you using only language. And I would compare him to H.P. Lovecraft in that regard. I recall reading Salem's Lot when it came out, and I could only read it in public because it was just too frightening to read in my home alone. So I would read it in public spaces.
I love that comment because there are so many books that people would only read in private. So that's great.
Anyway, I just wanted to say kudos to him. I think he's so talented in that regard. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Elaine. And headed to Augusta and Peggy. Hi, Peggy. Go ahead.
Hi. Normally, I listen to this show while seated at my desk and tweeting comments back and forth all the time. But today I'm on the road, and I wanted to say I started reading Stephen King when I took over a community college library here in the state and knew we needed money to expand the collection. King's support of libraries and literacy in Maine made me go through my I'm terrified of scary things. I do not read scary things, but I did, and I'm so glad I did.
I'm in the same place. I don't read scary things, but after reading Carrie, I'll stick my toe in the water a little deeper, I think.
And he has supported libraries all across the
Absolutely.
State, too. He's been a real champion of keeping libraries together and keeping people going to libraries.
Peggy, thanks for calling. Going to Fort Kent and Pat. Hi, Pat.
Good afternoon. Thanks for a great show.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was in high school in the 70s, and there was a young lady in our class that
Oh, shoot, Pat, I can barely hear you. Are you in a place with poor cell reception? Shoot, can you try to call us back? Because we can't hear you, but we'd love to hear what you have to say. So if you could call us back, especially from a landline, that would be fantastic. Headed to Brunswick and Nancy. Hi, Nancy, go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just happened to be reading today's Coastal Journal here in Brunswick about ghost-ridden places, and one of them is the old Brunswick High School, which has been torn down. But I'll just read this short little bit. To add to its spooky reputation, the old Brunswick High School once employed a part-time janitor named Stephen King. Mm. While cleaning the girls' bathroom one day, King had a daydream about an unpopular girl being teased in the school shower. Eventually, he turned this idea into his first published novel, Carrie, which launched a very successful writing career. In one sense, Brunswick High was the birthplace of Maine's master of horror.
That's great. And what a coincidence that it's in today's Coastal Journal.
I never read Carrie. I have a vivid imagination, so the only book I've ever read of his is On Writing, which I thought was very good, but I steer clear of anything else. Again,
Stephen King's the author of one of my favorite quotes that my kids would be rolling their eyes if they could hear me right now. But the road to hell is paved with adverbs. I love that. And that's fantastic. Thanks for your call, Nancy. And there's so much in the book where you read it and you see Maine, and whether it's the Brunswick High School or a pond or a field or the police station where the town drunk asked to be locked up to protect himself.
By.
Yeah. So going to Buxton and Andre, go ahead.
I just wanted to comment, growing up, my mother was always a big Stephen King fan and, always Stephen King, on the bookshelf. And In the Eyes of the Dragon was one of the first real big, thick, novels or books that I ever read, and just really opened me up to the whole world of literature, of education, and really got me down a certain path. So a lot of where I am today has to do with starting by reading In the Eyes of the Dragon.
Go ahead.
That's a fun one. I think I read that one when it came out too, and I think a lot of people have an experience similar to yours, Andre. You get your eyes open to the experience of reading by a book that grabs you and won't let you go, and then all of a sudden you're a reader. And I think there was an article in The New Yorker recently about how somebody was worried about how kids shouldn't read the Percy Jackson books because then they won't read The Odyssey. And I think that has it exactly backwards. I think you put every book in front of a kid that kid will open and turn the pages of, because then you get to The Odyssey eventually and everything's going to be fine.
Yeah.
And I think, King is somebody who does that because the books are lucid, accessible, they're gripping. And as we've been discussing, there's a lot more to them than I think sometimes they get credit for.
Andre, thanks so much for your call. We just have a little bit of time left. I want to ask all of our panelists, put you on the spot. If you liked Carrie, what else should you read?
I would read his memoir, for one. I love that. The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon. When I was teaching high school, many of my students, that was an opening for them to read. And they were reluctant readers, and they just loved that book. They just it changed their perception of reading. I wanted to mention, too, I love the way that he ends Carrie with that chilling scene of maybe Carrie coming back, or maybe Carrie from the Brunswick High School channeling herself. It leaves you with this sense of foreboding that is classic King.
And Kate, what about you? What would you recommend?
Well, I think that The Fault in Our Stars is because this Carrie is really very much, I think, in the YA, what would now be today's YA genre. And I think there's some really wonderful books there. But The Fault in Our Stars, I think, is a very moving book. And read it before you see the movie.
Just like Carrie. Read it before you
see
the movie,
right? Always read the book before you see the movie.
Life advice for the day. Read the book before you see the movie. What about you, Alex?
I think if you like Carrie, then you can't go wrong with any of King's other early books. The stuff he's doing now has a really different vibe, and I like it a lot too. But for The Shining and The Stand and Salem's Lot, those first four books that came out sort of in the mid and late 70s, they're every single one of them is terrific. And if you found something you liked in Carrie, you'll like those too.
And Stephen King is, I believe the best-selling author of all time. What is it about him compared to all the other fantastic authors who are out there that bring people back again and again all over the world?
That's a good question. I think he's developed a really rabid fan base, people that will just read everything that he's written. And people like this kind of reading. It's, you know, early on it was challenges not being literary enough, but it is entertaining, and people like to read to be entertained.
Well, that'll be our last word today. Thank you all so much for being here and being part of this program. Kate Flora, an author and former assistant attorney general. Her most recent books are And Grant You Peace, a Joe Burgess mystery, and Death Dealer, a true crime story. Bill Lundgren is a writer, a blogger, and a bookseller at Longfellow Books in Portland. Alex Irvine has written more than 30 books. His most recent novel is Buyout, a near-future noir about the surveillance state and capital punishment. And we'll put up information about these books on our Facebook page. John Keimel ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, including all of our Your Vote 2014 interviews, by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith. Next month, our book club reconvenes on Wednesday, November 26th to discuss Roxana Robinson's novel, Sparta. It's a story of a young Marine who, upon returning from multiple tours in Iraq, discovers just how severely combat has altered life. Please join us Wednesday, November 26th, for a conversation about Roxana Robinson's novel, Sparta. Next Friday, the third annual Maine Calling Made in Maine gift guide and show. You heard right. Next Friday, we will be broadcasting from Space Gallery in Portland, talking about some of the great products made throughout Maine. After the show, we invite you to come down to check out crafts, products, and ideas from Maine vendors. That's next Friday, November 7th. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.